Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. So this morning we have Carrie Cohen, a gardener who's been on before, but it's been a while since you've been on the Garden Conversation to talk gardening.
Good morning, Mardell. Yep.
We talk gardening other times, not on the radio. So now we just get to do it publicly. And some people would maybe say that this was not an easy thing to talk about publicly, but we're going to talk about what we've learned. I unfortunately have gained a reputation in this community of people think I know what I'm doing about gardening, and partly it's because I do this show, and so people believe me. And so I've been thinking about how have I learned, because certainly I do acknowledge that I have more gardening expertise than I did 20 years ago when I got here, 25 years ago. So how did I learn that? And I found that kind of an interesting thing to think about. And so I decided to talk to my gardening friends, like Carrie, about it. So I'm posing the question to her, and we are going to talk about things we've learned in gardening.
Okay.
So when I ask you that question, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
Well, the first thing that came to mind was to not plant too early in the season. Even, you know, oftentimes we'll have these early windows of beautiful, warm weather.
And you think it's going to be like that forever.
Yes. Yeah. And you think spring's here and the varied thrushes are back and there's all these signs that it's time. But I have found that just waiting and being patient and watching some of the native plants and watching their growth pattern, because they really seem to be
more knowledgeable.
Sync with what the weather is actually doing and presenting. And so when they really get going, like the ferns, when the ferns are really up out of the ground, out of that fiddlehead stage, then
you think, okay, the ground's ready for it.
Yeah.
Because there, you know, there's a whole lot of scientific explanations for that. I think the soil temperature, those plants are really, they know how nighttime temperatures are, you know, oftentimes it can be nice during the day, but it's still getting really cold at night.
Yep.
And that's hard to monitor. For me, it's hard to monitor, but the plants are kind of doing it. The native plants are doing that on their own.
Yep. Yeah.
And if you have similar experience to me, even when you plant those plants out early, the other ones catch up, don't they?
That's right.
So it's kind of just
I've done it over the years, and it seems like if you put out calendula early, it sits there struggling and maybe even gets stressed. And then the calendula that goes out when it's actually a nice supportive time for that plant, then everything just kind of syncs up and matures at the same rate.
It's amazing. Even broccoli, I plant my transplants out, and I oftentimes will plant seeds in the ground at the same time. And yes, there is a difference. That's a pretty dramatic thing, but not nearly the amount of time that, you know, I planted my broccoli about 7 or 8 weeks ago that I put in as transplants. But the broccoli that I plant at that time is not 7 or 8 weeks.
Yeah,
behind.
That's 2 months, full 2 months. Yeah. So that it's
So the plants definitely do catch up once you put them out in the ground. So I kind of have to tie my hands behind my back at times because there's something about the spring anticipation of. For me, it's like I just want to get these plants out of my hoop house. I just want them done and out of the way, and I have to tie my hands back. But not too much because I have to do other things with my hands, too. So. So I would say in answering my own question, other things that I have learned, somebody said to me, I don't remember if it was Vivian Menaker or Nancy Soggy or one of those gardeners when I got here. They said, this sounds like a Nancy Soggyism. don't let a weed seed go to, don't let a weed go to seed in your bed, yeah, ever.
Right.
And
that sounds like wonderful advice.
Yeah, and it sounds kind of like a Nancy Soggy sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I kind of have taken that to heart. I try to do that. It's very difficult to do that in the August when the rains come and the plants are saying, oh, you've got to reproduce. And I'm in the thick of harvesting, so the last thing I'm thinking about is weeding. But it makes a really big difference for the next year.
Right.
And I've observed a couple different places where weed seeds have gotten in, especially chickweed. That's the tough one. It takes about 2 years of not letting any weed seeds fall in that ground before it's kind of clean.
Even with chickweed.
Oh. Yeah. It seems to overwinter, or it seems to last about 2 years.
Okay.
And then you're kind of home free after two years of being diligent. So, and different weeds are, of course, different. You can't necessarily do that with buttercup. Buttercup has those underground sort of things.
Right.
As well as horsetail.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I have blankets of chickweed. And I think I will always have that. And so I have really just learned to...
You've come to love the chickweed.
Yeah. Like I eat it. It's edible.
Great.
Or I turn it under and just stall it a little bit. And then when it kind of reorients itself, it's a little easier to pull. Or the plants that I have put in will get a head start.
Can compete with
it.
Yeah. Okay. So different styles of... how do you eat it? Do you eat it in a salad?
I'll put it in smoothies a little bit in a salad. It's got a kind of a grass-like flavor.
I'd call it grassy.
Yeah.
To me, it's kind of grassy. But it's pretty high in nutrition.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Good. So any other things that you have learned?
Well, I think the other lesson that I've learned that was really difficult was that
lessons are more difficult than others.
Yes. Is that you have to protect your crops from all the things that also want to eat them.
And in our area, there's a lot of different things.
There's a lot of, you know, from little insects all the way up to the moose, you know. It's just
and
like, and everybody in between.
Yeah.
It just, everybody enjoys a good meal. And
especially when you've planted it for them.
Yeah. So I...
So what have been your biggest protection or pest dilemmas or lessons?
I would say that protecting my raspberries has been the biggest challenge. I've tried various methods, and last year I had a fence that had rebar at about a 4 foot height, and then a high bar, you know, kind of at moose eye height, and I thought that would be enough of a deterrent, but what they did is in the fall when the forest would start to wane a little bit, you know, all the fresh,
and the raspberries are going
and
fine.
The raspberries were beautiful. They just really wanted into that space, and they would do kind of this limbo down on their front elbows.
It's like amazing.
You know, if that's what a joint in a moose is called, but they dip down and go under, and then they went in and just decimated my entire crop just as it was coming into fruit. So
how frustrating.
It was so frustrating, and I so then it was, I had this dilemma, do I put up a hoop house over the raspberries or you know, to put an electric fence around it, or, you know, there's a lot of choices, but ultimately I decided to build a wooden fence around the entire garden. So now everything is protected and, hopefully this will do the trick.
How high is it?
Well, it has a four, up to 4 feet, it's solid.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an open space with some netting
mm-hmm.
and some of the beautiful handmade fish that Sarah made in art school.
Oh, fun.
And so those are like a visual
mm-hmm.
deterrent. And then there's a high bar
that shouldn't be able to get over.
No, I don't think mm-hmm. they can get over mm-hmm. that. And that's at about 7 feet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I think
hope you're
my
protected.
Crops are safe.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard amazing stories. I mean, I would have never thought that a moose would go limbo underneath a fence, but I've heard amazing stories, especially what they do in Mud Bay. It seems like those
yeah.
Mud Bay moose are
yeah.
trained to into gardens.
You just can't even imagine it because they are so big and awkward
mm-hmm.
looking, but they're really quite agile
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
they can jump
mm-hmm.
and they can work their way into pretty small spaces if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we have no problem with moose out the highway. My theory has always been that they have enough other wild stuff that
mm-hmm.
they just don't even really venture into the garden. And
right.
so I guess I should knock on wood when I say that because so far we haven't had any problem. So... Well, one of the things that I would say, a piece of advice that has been given to me, which is another part of this, how I've learned is with piece of advice, is a piece of advice you gave me, but I can't really do very well, and that's to make your beds all the same size so that you don't have to have different size remay, you don't have to have different hoops. Just yesterday, I went and got a piece of remay, and I thought it was the right size, and it was 2 feet too short. So I had
yeah.
So if I had them all the same size, I wouldn't have any of that issue.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that if any of the listeners are just starting out and building a new garden,
mm-hmm.
and they're choosing to build raised beds,
mm-hmm.
then I would build all your boxes exactly
getting
the same
them
size.
Uniform is yeah. really helps in the long.
Yep. Then
long
your remake
yeah.
can be the same size. Your hoops.
Mm-hmm.
Your
yeah.
If you do a drip line, you can standardize everything.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, that's something that I'm guessing that both you and I kind of take as a given of using remay. But somebody who's new to, we're calling it remay, it's actually a row cover. Remay is one brand number,
mm-hmm.
brand name mm-hmm. of this. And one of the things that's been brought to my attention of new people who come to town, they look at me crossways when I say that I'm using this stuff. But I think most of us who have gardened here for any length of time do use it. And so
mm-hmm.
do you have any thoughts on that? How do you use it?
I use it all the time now on most of my crops, and what I'm finding is that it warms the soil, and it warms, I think it might warm the air, and it cuts down maybe on the air flow
mm-hmm.
around
mm-hmm.
the crop, and so the crops really respond to the added warmth.
Yeah, my theory is, and I'm not a scientist on this, but my theory is that it keeps them warmer at night. It
yeah.
holds in some of that heat,
mm-hmm.
and then also wind is a factor in a lot of places. And there's no question that the remay really helps with wind.
Yep.
And tender young plants probably respond worse to wind than heat fluctuate. You know,
mm-hmm.
cold and whatnot. It's that wind is really decimating, dries them out, and.
Yeah.
So I think the remay is good in that way, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And another nice thing in my garden is I have 14 hens that will come over to the garden and scratch
mm-hmm.
the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have remay over a bed, then they can't get in there.
Protecting them from another pest.
Exactly.
Your own pest.
My own pest.
Your own pest. So.
Yes.
All right. Our 15 minutes is gone and finished, as it always goes really fast. We probably could have talked for 2 hours about things that we've learned over the years. So
thank you for having me, Mardell.
Thank you so much for coming in, Carrie. Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.